Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and though I despise the NFL social justice politics and I'm loath to watch games where I'm bombarded by social justice lectures, not just from the NFL, but also from its corporate sponsors. You got to say, that was a hell of a weekend of football with three of the four games coming down to walk-off field goals and the other a touchdown in overtime. And, of course, the Brady-Rodgers showdown that was to be will include neither Brady nor Rodgers. So it's sort of the passing of Rodgers and Brady versus Burrow and Mahomes, you know, sort of the passing of the torch almost. It was paradigm shifting, perhaps. But I'm not here to chart X's and O's. That's not what we do on the show. Although it'd be fun.
This is so fun. I like this.
It would be fun to do, but we need to keep the main thing the main thing. And the main thing here is Aaron Rodgers' interview with ESPN, a pretty in-depth interview that he gave ESPN before this weekend's games, and, of course, that incredible loss they suffered up in Lambeau. And Rodgers commenting on the controversy in which he has been ensnarled over the last year's controversies, I guess, but, of course, mainly with respect to COVID and his status as, you know, immunized in quotation marks because he was pursuing preventative homeopathic remedies to prevent him from himself from getting infected, to then just speaking out against sort of the vax mandates and the testing policy in the NFL that didn't make much sense and which actually has now been suspended, by the way.
Right. But also, yeah, and he got caught COVID, but he did some therapeutics that helped him recover in less than 48 hours.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, he's a 38-year-old man in a professional athlete, pretty good shape. So the chances of serious illness or death with somebody who fits that profile with no underlying conditions are basically nil. And that was a point Aaron Rodgers made in the CSPN interview. Now, it covers a lot of ground. I actually encourage people to go read it because you get a deeper insight into Aaron Rodgers beyond just this COVID flap. But focusing on the COVID flap, that was one of the responses he offered to his detractors, including the president of the United States. Pandemic of the unvaccinated? No. And unhelpful to continue saying that. Pandemic of those with comorbidities?
Yes.
Well, that's what the data says.
And that's what he said. And I tweeted out after Governor Pritzker tweeted after the game, this is unbelievable. Unlike the Packers offense, we know vaccines are still effective in the winter. Please get your free vaccine and booster. And then he put a link to locations. Really overweight man who has had 2 years to try to get it together because he knows that comorbidities are driving this. He knows that now it's 80% of the people who are severely ill in the hospital and dying from COVID are obese or morbidly obese.
And old.
And
age,
yeah,
age being the number one factor.
Well, he's 57.
And comorbidities, sort of layering on, because, of course, the older are likely to have more comorbidities. And what's the average number of comorbidities for the person who has died from COVID? Four?
Four, yeah.
Uh-huh. Something else that Roger said in this interview, though, because it's sort of a jumping off point from COVID, but it's a larger point that he makes. He said, when in the course of human history has the side that's doing the censoring and trying to shut people up and make them show papers and marginalize a part of the community ever been the correct side? We're censoring dissenting opinions. What are we trying to do? Save people from being able to determine the validity of their own, or the validity on their own, or to listen and to think about things and come to their own conclusion? Freedom of speech is dangerous now if it doesn't align with their mainstream narrative. That's, I think, first and foremost what I wanted people to understand. And what people should understand is that there's censorship in this country going on right now. He continued, are they censoring terrorists or pedophiles, criminals who have Twitter profiles? No. They're censoring people, and they're shadow banning people who have dissenting opinions about vaccines. Why is that? Is that because Pfizer cleared $33 billion last year and Big Pharma has more lobbyists in D.C. than senators and representatives combined?
Wow.
Why is the reason? Either way, if you want to be an open-minded person, you should hear both sides, which is why I listen to, now he's done it, people like Dr. Robert Malone and Dr. Peter McCullough. I have people on the other side as well. I read stuff on the vaccine hesitancy side, and I read stuff on the vaccines are the greatest thing in the world side. When you censor and make pariahs out of anybody who questions what you believe in or what the mainstream narrative is, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, and Rogers has done this before, too. I like what he did previously when he was asked, I think it was on McAfee's show, that show he does every week with a former teammate of his who was a punter, Pat McAfee. And it was like, what are you reading? Because I guess he was standing or sitting in front of a bookcase. And he turned around and he pointed to Atlas Shrugged. And right. He said, oh, you know, Atlas Shrugged.
And actually, he was with the Peyton Brothers.
Brothers. Yep. That's right. It was Monday Night Football with the Peyton Brothers.
Yeah.
And that's right. And yeah, that's recounted in the ESPN story. And then the reaction was, oh, you know, he's an objectivist. Oh, he's a libertarian. No. So it was like pro Aaron Rodgers. He pointed to Atlas Shrugged. Oh, he's an Ayn Rand devotee. And then the other side was, oh, my God, he's, you know, this a ruthless capitalist because he pointed. And the point, and he said, like, I never read the book. Did you see how many pages are in that book?
Right. It's too long. It's thick. It's thicker than a Lakeview phone book.
Everybody, but so this also speaks to, again, whether we like it or not, you have to admit what is true, the cultural power of NFL football, the cultural power of celebrity and sports heroes. And he knows that.
Yeah, but what happened, remember last month when Biden went to Kentucky to visit the area after the tornadoes, there was a woman with a Packers hat on. And he literally, instead of talking about the victims and how we're going to rebuild, which he did get to, you know, he was trying to be fun and hip, and he said, tell that quarterback he's got to get the vaccine.
Right.
It's none of his gosh darn business. And especially, wow, he's so off topic, too. I mean, people just lost loved ones.
Yeah, and so Aaron, that's what Aaron Rodgers in part was responding to, was that little jab at him, pun intended, by Biden. But I just find what Rodgers does with his platform, especially now, interesting. And you know, this is a guy who mainly kept to himself. I mean, he's been in the league, you know, 16 years, mainly kept to himself. And he's sort of come out, and he's sort of an interesting guy. I think he's really interesting. I forget the Packers Bears nonsense.
Yeah,
you know, Bears fans can pin their hopes on Robbie Gould. You know, they got him to hang on to.
Robbie Gould.
And I guess Jimmy G, since he's a local.
Yes. And his family listens, and we love you. Thank you.
His
aunt and uncle.
Tell me he's going to have to play a lot better against the Rams than he did the Packers.
Real quick, though, Jimmy G was 14 years old, a freshman in high school, when Robbie Gould joined the Bears in 2005.
Well, yeah, Robbie Gould's 39.
When he hugged him after the game, he was like, you're a legend, man. Because he literally grew up watching him.
Yeah. Well,
awesome.
Okay. Yeah, stop throwing picks, Jimmy G.
beard.
But I just, Aaron Rodgers to me is using his platform in a productive way. This is like, Aaron Rodgers agrees with me. I don't care about that. Aaron Rodgers is using his platform to promote intellectual curiosity.
And freedom of medical choice, too. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. And but well beyond COVID. Like for somebody to promote thinking for yourself in that platform, he's thoughtful enough to promote thinking for yourself, being intellectually curious, and provide an example of someone who's intellectually curious. I think that's more impactful because of the cultural power he has, for good or for bad, he has it. And so do, you know, athletes in his stratosphere. I think that's more memorable and impactful than, you know, all the touchdowns he's thrown to Devontae Adams. I really do. And so I tell you what, I have great respect for the guy. I really do.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Frank, Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. You know, Aaron Rodgers and these athletes were speaking out at it, like the guy in Australia, the Australian Open, I forget his name. They're almost like the older women in France in the 1700s with their salons who, you know, allowed guys like Voltaire and others to espouse their ideas. It's almost the same type of situation. I mean, they were censored back then in 1700s France under the Bourbons, and we're now censored under the lamestream media and big tech. So it's almost the athletes who have the cultural power who have to lead us out of this in a way just like the women did in the 1700s in France.
Yeah. Thanks. That's interesting historical comparison as usual from Frank. But so Djokovic, the tennis player, you know, he's I don't know, you know, how much leadership he's going to provide. That'll be interesting going forward, particularly as other countries sort of follow the Australian example, or at least seem like they're going to, like starting with France and the French Open. Definitely Aaron Rodgers. And there have been others throughout this.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why the Australian government didn't want Djokovic in there is because they were afraid that he would spread anti-vaccine propaganda just by playing in front of the crowd, that people would follow his lead.
Right. And then they let the COVID-positive Russian player play. So what does that spread?
Because that makes sense, yeah.
What does that spread? That spreads distrust of your government, which is appropriate.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Lawlessness and disorder and death in Blue City, America. New York City over the weekend, Jason Rivera, 22-year-old police officer, was murdered responding to a domestic call. His partner, Wilbert Mora, who I think is in his late 20s, bullet to the brain. He's in critical condition. I think he's already had two surgeries this weekend. Here is the 911, here's the dispatch, police officers interacting with dispatch calling for help because there are officers down.
Special, let me get a bus here. ASAP, let me get a bus.
That's why I have the bus on route.
What's going on?
Let me get a bus.
Oh, there's a bus.
I'm rushing the bus. I'm rushing the bus.
So you hear that at the end, multiple requests for a bus and ambulance, three MOS shot is what was said, meaning members of the service. It turned out it was two, as I just recounted.
And here's the mayor of New York, you know, Eric Adams, former New York police officer. Here's his solution.
We can't continue to allow violent shooters to remain on the street. We need to collaborate with city, state, and federal entities the way we did during 9/11.
The way we did during, treat this as we, a 9/11. What's going on?
Well, the collaboration, yeah. Right. The governor, see if this rings familiar, this response, Kathy Hochul, who is quickly becoming one of the most noxious governors in the country, and there's stiff competition for that title. This is her response. Listen closely.
Okay.
And tell me if this reminds you of anyone.
Our hearts and prayers are with the families and the members of the NYPD, but also it's a resounding call to action. We have to do more to fight the scourge of illegal guns on our streets, and we need Washington teaming up with us, teaming up with locals to get it done. These guns, despite our tough laws here in the state of New York, and we're proud of them, they're coming in from other states. They're flooding our streets. And I have pledged the resources of the New York State Police to become embedded with NYPD and others to help them. In fact, we've tripled funding for this gun interdiction effort because they're coming in from Virginia and Maryland and coming in from Pennsylvania to our very streets, and we have to do whatever we can to protect our neighborhoods.
Now, are you sure that wasn't Mayor Lightfoot and she just put, you know, Maryland and Virginia in for Indiana and Ohio?
Mayor Lightfoot and every mayor of Chicago in my lifetime. Yeah, exactly. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Because, of course, these big blue city Dem socialists are in the business of instrumentality, not in the business of punishing, restraining evil. Just the instrumentality of evil. As if we remove, first of all, as if it's possible to get the guns off, the illegal guns off the street. It's not really. And even if it were, then these habitual violent offenders would become choir boys? Is that what I'm supposed to believe?
They'd use other weapons. And they know that. I mean, in Chicago, an 8-year-old was killed Saturday, just walking down the street, 26 and Pulaski with her mom.
Yeah,
and they heard
village.
Gunfire. Yeah, they heard gunfire, and they ran into a bank. You know, she was trying to protect her, and the bullet hit the girl that's 8. She looks 5. Everybody thought she was 5, but here's that police audio.
The address is 3957 on 26. It's a child. 3957 on 26, 10-4, child is struck. 1063, 1063, Adam, 10-4.
We have a 5-year-old shot in the head, it looks like.
It's just, it never, broad daylight. And the guy, it was a random, it was a stray bullet that was intended for somebody else, but the 26-year-old, who the bullet was intended for, he was shot too and is in critical condition. But when's it going to end? And they moved here 2 months ago, Dan, from Mexico for a better life. They were safer in Mexico than walking down the streets of Chicago on a sunny Saturday afternoon.
Mm-hmm. As I've said before, all we can do is tell you the stories and propose some sensible solutions. Can't make anybody in power listen. Can't make anybody who put them in power listen. Anybody who keeps them in power listen. By the way,
and tweeting about Aaron Rodgers, and somebody else, oh, is she wearing a mask? Is she vaccinated? Shut up! She's dead! God!
By the way, in New York City, business leaders, Charlie Gasparino reporting, business leaders are a bit upset about the new Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg and his non-prosecution decarceration position. And they're getting together to meet with him and or move a recall if they can't get satisfaction. How about Chicago?
Crickets. Mm-hmm. We had one business owner try, and he then got ticketed and fined.
No, let's be real honest. Okay.
Yeah, I'll be honest.
Yeah. He didn't try.
What should he have done then?
Joe Perillo?
Yeah.
I appreciate the guy from Lampert's Jewelry Store writing an open letter, making it public, coming on our show to talk about it. I appreciate Joe Perillo talking to the media and issuing a clarion call, enough is enough. But I'm sorry, that's not trying. That's not what trying looks like. Okay. One statement in one moment and then walking away is not trying. And yes, it's unfair. Why should he do it and nobody else does? Blah, blah, blah. I get it. The free rider problem, or really the free rider cop out. That's what we use. That's what we all use in Chicago and Illinois, the free rider cop out. And you have people of unbelievable means, financially, politically, who won't do anything, who don't want to get involved. So when are the little ones like Melissa Ortega going to stop getting gunned down? They're not going to. How many were gunned down last year under 18?
516 and 149 killed. including a one-month-old.
And what kind of response did that generate?
No, they moved the detectives. Now they're in police uniforms, and they're just sitting there like...
Well, I'm not talking about police response. What kind of response did that generate from the civilian community?
Nothing.
Can we just be honest
right,
with
yeah,
ourselves?
No, yeah, nothing that I'm aware of.
Nobody wants to put themselves on the line in Chicago because they've given up, they think it's lost, or they're insulated from it more or less until they find out they're not when their car dealership gets held up or something happens to a loved one or the loved one of a friend. That stuff is going to happen. I don't see the desire there. And for those who do have the desire, they're politically unpalatable to the Chicago elites, business elites, press elites, civic elites, you know, in the arts and so forth. Like me, politically unpalatable. So, okay. No problem. So the politically unpalatable will leave. And those who are the elites in the city will continue to lord over it for their own benefit, and the bodies will continue to pile up. When they had a chance, this rare occurrence when you had an open seat for mayor, what did they do? Ken Griffin and everybody else, what did they do? They sat on their hands. They waited to see what field assembled, with the parade of horribles that was inevitable, and then they chose the lesser of two evils. And then when the primary shook out, they chose the lesser of two evils again. What did they do when Kim Fox was up for re-election? Sat on their hands, watched some billionaire's kid who was wholly unprepared for the political arena, demonstrated very little skill, had sort of a thin resume as a former prosecutor, mount a weak campaign against Kim Fox. So, you know, people can delude themselves, criticize my criticism. Go ahead. You tell me how I've got it wrong. I ask this question all the time. I understand that most people who listen to this show agree with me and agree with us, and sometimes agree with you instead of me, but whatever. I ask all the time, tell me how I've got it wrong. And what's the response? No, they're cowards. The rich and powerful in Chicago are cowards. They don't have the guts to publicly say anything is right or wrong. They only have the guts to temporarily, publicly assert their interests and then slink away because I don't want any more trouble. Tony and Roselle.
You know, it reminds me of what Rahm Emanuel once said, never let a crisis go to waste. And I'll add, even if you have to manufacture or create it yourself.
All right, Tony. Pete in Milwaukee. Hey, Pete.
Good morning.
Morning.
Say, listen, these guns are not shooting people. It's the pieces of garbage that are carrying them that are doing it, regardless of life. They're shooting these police officers in the head. The only way we're going to stop this is to stop the people that are carrying the gun and protect our police officers. You point a gun at an officer, that's it.
I get it. Nobody's listening, Pete. And by the way, in Milwaukee, I mean, just again, here's the response nationally from this same cadre of Dem socialists that we have in Chicago. Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm, the guy who let the parade killer, Christmas parade out again and again, who
was pursuing
a witch hunt against Scott Walker when he was governor, political hack in the district attorney's office there. And the city council in Milwaukee, You know what the problem is with the more than 10,000 car thefts that were reported in Milwaukee last year? About half of those arrested juveniles under the age of 16.
Right.
You know what the problem is?
What?
Cars are too easy to steal.
Oh. Oh.
Democrat socialist aldermen in the city of Milwaukee want to sue Kia and Hyundai for making cars that politicians say are too easy to steal.
So it's a car manufacturer's fault. Of course it is. Why wouldn't it be?
Like the gun manufacturer?
Yeah.
Or like the retail outlets that aren't doing a good enough job in Chicago protecting themselves.
Exactly. Wow.
Criminals are the victims, and victims are falling down on the job. That's the response.
Victims need to buy better cars so they don't get their vehicles stolen. Yeah.
In Detroit, Devon Marsh, 41 years old. I'm sorry I gave his name. I shouldn't have. He was arrested for setting his pregnant girlfriend on fire.
Oh.
She is pregnant with twins.
Oh, God.
Burned 60% of her body.
Jesus.
He was released by posting $5,000 and he has disappeared. Bonded out for $5,000.
Wow.
He had a $50,000 bond. He posts $5,000 and he's gone. This is the response. And in big blue city America, until the Dem socialists that put these people in power decide that they're tired of being victimized by the people in power and what they give license to, it won't change. Matt, Mount Greenwood.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Ironically, talking about this. So yesterday in church, the gospel was talking about being part of one body and every body part having a purpose. I think that as opposed to losing our minds over the stupidity and the ignorance of people, we all do our own little part, listening to folks like yourself who are very well-educated and knowledgeable about this and conveying that information and doing our own homework and standing up against the tyrants, because it is absolutely tyrannical what's happening right now. And again, if we just take it, it's a little more palatable. If we take it one little bit at a time, do what we can do on our own, having a conversation one-on-one or a group of people, it might help, because I don't see anything else happening, because the news isn't reporting anything, obviously, and the politicians are doing whatever they want to do. So have a good day.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Greg, Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. Here in Jefferson, Portage Park, in the past week and a half, we've had, three people shot, one in the head. One woman got pistol whipped after a carjacking. Mm. And Saturday morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, Sunnyside from Milwaukee Avenue to Central, SUV and a car had a shootout driving down the street. And they found, at least 20
Rounds.
Shell casings, yeah, from this thing, and I'm sure there's another 20 or 30 out there, because a buddy of mine almost got shot. He was getting his garbage can in, and it's just, you know what, it's out of control.
And
what does our alderman do? We get this notice about helping the quote unhoused, the homeless who
want to be housed,
right? Exactly, causing a lot of these problems with drugs and everything else. And about helping out the unhoused rather than doing something about this. Gardner, another useless sack. You guys have a good one.
Thanks for the call, Greg.
That's
useless
a whole other
sack.
Topic. With
I like
homeless.
Useless sack.
Yeah, useless sack is pretty good.
Uh-huh. Joe, Hoffman Estates.
Hey, guys. Good morning. A lot of people are not going to say anything, especially people in power, because look what happened to Perillo with inspectors showing up. There's nothing to gain. Actually afraid of the government, literally afraid of the government, which is spooky.
Well, okay, that's an accurate description, and that's an excuse that's offered. But to that, I say, put your pee hat on. Put your pee hat on. You're afraid of your government? That's how you want to live? And by the way, what's the cost benefit? Are you more afraid of some code inspector? Or are you more afraid of your kid being the next Melissa Ortega in the city of Chicago, in those neighborhoods in particular where the preponderance of the violence occurs? Which are you more afraid of? Not getting a garbage can or your kid getting gunned down in the crossfire? Better do some trade-off analysis on that. And, you know, the whole Joe Perillo thing, and again, I like the guy and I appreciate him, but you cannot touch Joe Perillo. No matter how many code inspectors are sent, and it happened once, big deal. It's been happening in the city forever. It doesn't make it right, but it's a feudal system. We all know that. Let's stop feigning surprise. And Joe knows that, too. He's been around Chicago a long time. Grew up in Little Italy, for goodness sakes. He knows.
He knew. Yeah.
So what?
He called it before it happened.
You can't touch Joe Perillo. There's nothing the mayor or the city can do to him. He could close up shop and put that dealership, as he said, in the suburbs tomorrow and sell just as many cars. And it's not about Joe Perillo. It's about Joe Perillo as an example. Put your pee hat on if you're going to give me that cop out. What are you afraid of? These petty tyrants, really? If you're a workaday person, squeeze from both sides in the middle, you got something to say. I understand that. If you're in the stratosphere where you find the captains of industry and the civic elites in Chicago, you got nothing. You got nothing. All you're saying is I'm trading my security, my posh environs, my status. That is more important to me than being an agent for change, than doing what I know is right. That's what you're saying. And there's just no two ways about it. I'm sorry.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Stop the morning, Dan and Amy. So there was a Stop the Mandates rally in D.C. over the weekend, but we've got a bit of housekeeping to do before we get to that.
And the one in Highland Park.
Okay. Right. Yeah, that was advertised on the show on Friday.
Yeah.
Exactly.
People showed up.
So we got to get Fauci's theme music correct.
Oh, yes. What are we doing, changing it?
Well, I'm not saying that, but I needed to, you know, get your opinion on this, because I think there's potentially another way to go in addition to or alternatively with Sad Little Man, Five Times August. So folks listening can weigh in on this, too. We want to get it right. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text. I know, of course, the theme music ever since became aware of Five Time August's offering has been Sad Little Man, and it was our political song of the year in 2021, you'll remember.
Sad little man, sad little man, you better run now while you know you can. Sad little man, you don't fool me, you sad little man.
And I really like that sort of the Gautier rhythm to that. But we've got another offering to consider. This is from a Lebanese-born Canadian artist. And Five Times August from Canada, too? So, I don't know, something about Canada. We've heard from Canadian rappers and stuff, too. A lot of crooners in Canada singing about COVID. I mean, probably because they've got that fifth-grade drama teacher locking them down. This is Carl Wolf.
I'm open-minded.
All right. And with a little sampling help and, lyrical help, I guess, rhythmic help from Billy Ocean. Take a listen.
Oh.
Awesome. She coughed on me, now I'm feeling so weak. Just couldn't even reveal. In a blink of an eye, those COVID cases just increased. Yeah. They told us take the booster, we will be free. Omicron queen, how'd you get it if you took the vaccines?
Yeah, I like that dude's voice, don't you think?
Omicron Queen.
Sad Little Man or Omicron Queen? How would you prefer Fauci be memorialized? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Let people think about that. Yeah. What's your preference, Amy?
You know, I like Sad Little Man because it just hits home on a number of different levels. But that's catchy. That makes me want to get up and dance.
Like, exactly.
Omicron Queen.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, that was really bad singing.
Yeah. Well, that's why we let Carl Wolf sing it, not you.
Which one do you like better, Dan?
You know, I'm going to give a nod to the original work of Five Times August. But, I mean, Carl Wolf's offering, the lyrics are great. And that Billy Ocean tune is catchy.
It is.
You know, interchangeable. I'm happy to refer to Tony Fauci as the Omicron Queen. I like that better because... Of course, it's denigrating him as a man in addition to as a medical doctor. So I do like that about it. It's a tough call. You know, both have a lot of attributes. All right. Well, we'll consider thinking about that. Now we've given we've used both as the intro to Tony Fauci in this segment. But before we get to Fauci, these protests, Stop the Mandates protest in D.C. By the way, a Yahoo story. Federal government monitoring Stop the Mandates rally for extremists.
Oh, of course. They're all, you know, racist, extremists.
Everybody wants to say we're extremists, and all I can say is we're living in extreme times.
Yeah. And thousands showed up at the mall on Saturday. It was awesome.
Tried to get a burger last night. We got turned away because we didn't have a proof of vaccination card.
I'm not anti-vax. I'm fully vaccinated, but not this vaccine. Main reason being is because it's quote-unquote experimental.
A lot of signs. Daily Signal compiled some of the best signs. In a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. That was one. Ooh. That is a... Who said that? George Orwell, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Which was my favorite here? There's one here that was good. I like this one. Hashtag rage against the mainstream. That's perfect. That really is good. Rage against the mainstream. Not rage against the machine. Rage against the mainstream. Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, the mainstream media said all of these people here are spreading misinformation. And JFK, Robert Kennedy Jr., he's spreading misinformation. And
yeah, I'm not going to cast my lot with RFK Jr., even though he makes some salient points on the vaccines. But he's too much of a crank for me. I know some people have embraced him. I'm not one of them. If you're a crank in one area, which he is with respect to climate, it's hard for me to trust you. But there was a New Jersey mom who was interviewed. She's a Biden voter. She, to the point about asking questions, a point that Aaron Rodgers made and so forth, are you here because you're anti-vax? Of course, the rally was characterized as being anti-vax rather than stop the mandates, which is what it is for a lot of people that were in attendance, including this New Jersey mom who, as she later admits in the interview, is a Biden voter.
Well, now everything is anti-vaccine. If you ask a question, you're anti-vaccine. Mm-hmm. My kids have all of their vaccines. I was always a little bit scared because you hear things, but I did it. But this one, it just hasn't been proven. And there's no liability. So something happens, and there's a lot of things that have happened. There's these VAERS reports. There's like 22,000 people there from the vaccine and a million reports of injuries, so that's scary. I'm okay, my mom took it. And I made the appointment for her. Thank God she's okay, everyone. Most people are okay. There's only that little bit of people, but that's a lot when you give it to the whole population. So we just need to have the right to choose, that's all.
Mm-hmm. She's a threat to the Republic, to listen to the COVIDians talk. And this was her message to the guy she voted for President, Joe Biden.
I voted for him.
You voted for Biden.
I did. And I never thought. He actually said he wouldn't force it. So either he lied or something's power, that power on top of him. I don't know. But you have kids. I thought he was a good guy, right? You can't mandate this on people. There's injuries are real. Stop. Listen, this is criminal. And I hope he listens because I'm not a far right or far left. I'm a mom. I voted for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the Faucis and the Walensky's of the world weren't listening to those that were on the mall over the weekend. Rochelle Walensky on CBS just making official what we have been, frankly, ridiculing for the last 2 weeks. It was more or less official when Tony Fauci said it 2 weeks ago, but, you know, the CDC director has to give her imprimatur, which she did over the weekend.
And what we really are working to do is pivot the language to make sure that everybody is as up to date with their COVID-19 vaccines as they personally could be, should be, based on when they got their last vaccine. So importantly, right now, we're pivoting our language. We really want to make sure people are up to date. That means if you recently got your second dose, you're not eligible for a booster, you're up to date. If you are eligible for a booster and you haven't gotten it, you're not up to date, and you need to get your booster in order to be up to date.
Oh, no. Please, God, no. Please.
Well, again, and we know this because we're seeing this around the country, right? And,
right. A Warriors game, you have to show if you're not boosted, you can't get into the game.
Or to the state of Hawaii, for example.
Exactly. Right. Well, you have to self-quarantine at your own expense for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And trust me, they will make sure you quarantine because they are militant there. That is a craziest place. We should never have gone there.
If you want to have some fun, go back when the booster was first unveiled, and people like us were predicting, hey, vaccinated, get ready to be unvaccinated if you don't get the booster. And we're ridiculed. There's no proof of that. Fact checkers weighed in and said that's inaccurate, that's misinformation, and so on and so forth. And now what do we see?
And real quick, this is because, you know, they're saying that the people marching for the vaccine mandates to go away were crazy. How about this woman? This is another reason why Dan Proft is single. She tried to protest the protesters.
Mm-hmm. Dollars are going to pay for the police to shut down the road so that these white supremacists can party and have a hell of a time celebrating their loser president, loser Trump. Go the f*** home! Stop invading our territory! Go the f*** home! Take your loser president and shove him up!
Lovely lady.
What was...
Lovely
what was,
lady.
I didn't know. What was Mayor Lightfoot doing in D.C.?
And she was in a van that had kids finger painting, like the output of their hands on the van. So I hope she has nothing to do with children because she shouldn't be around children because she's mentally unstable.
No, she's just a leftist.
Oh, for that.
And, you know, then to pile the kids into the van and then they'll drive back to Hinsdale. No problem. Tony Fauci, sad little man, or Omicron Queen.
Omicron Queen.
He was on the Sunday talkies, as is his wont. That's what he does. He's a TV doctor.
He loves it.
He was asked by Martha Raddatz on This Week, filling in for Clinton Foundation Donor Zero, should the boosted get another booster?
Oh, no.
Can we start talking about the next booster?
The fourth boost? The fourth shot, Dan?
Yeah, let's, well, you know.
Oh, no.
The you know, all of the sentinels of the state are folding and aligning with the booster mandate and to stay up to date. So let's get on with it. Let's talk about the exciting fourth booster that could be coming down the road in, you know, the next 3 to 6 months.
It is quite conceivable, and I hope it's true, that the third shot boost will give a much greater durability of protection. We're following that very carefully. And when I say protection, Martha, I mean protection against severe disease. You are going to see breakthrough infections, as we've seen now, even in boosted people. But for the very most part, they're mild or even asymptomatic. That's where we would like to be, is to have that where you don't have to get more and more always every 6 months with a booster. We may need to boost again. That's entirely conceivable.
If it's conceivable, then it will happen.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line 646-36. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Tina, Joliet, you're on Chicago's Morning Answers.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hi. So I just wanted to share with you, one of my girlfriends stopped by the Highland Park rally and meandered on over to the pro-mandate COVIDiots and struck up conversation with them, asking them why they were there. And they were convinced, just as that lunatic in D.C., that the folks who want us to lift the restrictions and go back to a, quote, normal life are all fascists, Nazis, They call themselves pure blood because they're Aryan. They were in Highland Park to spread anti-Semitism. She said it was the most bizarre, devoid of reality conversation she's ever had with people in her life. And she said, well, I'm going to go walk over there and see if I can find an anti-Semite. I'll be back and let you know what I report. And they were concerned for her safety. They begged her not to walk over to the violent, 50, 60-year-old women who were protesting mask mandates.
Yeah. Those Highland Park housewives, thugs. Some of them are, but they were the ones on the that your friends were talking to. Obviously, they're sort of rhetorical thugs.
Yeah. Right, undercover Nazis. Right. She said there's zero hope for reaching these people. They're completely lost.
Yeah, and there's a city council meeting tonight to decide whether or not they're going to keep up this vaccine passports in Highland Park. So that's in Lake County, they don't have a vaccine mandate, but the mayor, that Nancy Rotering woman, Rotering, whatever her name is, but she's all in, like, we're going to save lives, Dan.
People are taking off their masks, spreading virus. Let's do what we can to mitigate the pressure on our healthcare system.
We're all going to die.
I think Highland Park should follow the St. Charles Library District. Just shut it down. Shut the Village Hall down to make sure that people can't get in there and spread the virus.
Yeah, the Walker Brothers Waffle House. Yeah, all that. And here's a guy or a person posing as a man who lives in Highland Park who loves the vaccine mandates.
In fact, I go to restaurants now because I know everybody else in there is vaccinated. I did not go before that because I didn't know who the people sitting next to me were.
Oh, my God, germs. She might have cooties. I mean, does he not understand, or is he living under a rock, that even if you're vaccinated, you could spread COVID to others and you could get COVID?
Yeah.
I mean, that person.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's about par for the course among the COVIDians. Mm-hmm. Terry, Rogers Park.
Last week I told my eye doctor I didn't appreciate having to show him a Vax card, and he got real mad and told me I could get another doctor if I don't like it. I also had a dust up with my primary doctor. I'm beginning to distrust Chicago's doctors. They're all in for these mandates. And I think government money's probably got something to do with it.
All right. Thanks for the call, Terry. Good luck finding other doctors. They're out there.
A lot of telehealth doctors that can help you.
Yeah. I mean,
you got to think outside the boxes these days.
We got a lot of docs that listen to the show that are in all the disciplines, optometrist, dentist, primary care. You can find them out there. You can find them. Maybe we'll mention some, but I want to get to, I have some names I could give you, but I want to get clearance, so
right.
I'm not speaking out of school. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Hey, one bit of good news, Amy. I hope this becomes popular on this side of the world, too.
Yeah.
China has reintroduced anal swab testing in advance of the Olympics.
Oh, it's great news.
I had to get tested recently to gain entrance into a place that I wanted to gain entrance to.
In Florida?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I asked for the anal swab.
Of course you did. Like, do I do it like this, doctor? Do I bend over this way?
That's my preference, but the nurse didn't feel comfortable, so I did the nasal instead. Nose. But it just wasn't as satisfying. I didn't feel as safe.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Too much money chasing too few goods. That's the story of our inflationary reality at this point. Well, we know that too much money is profligate monetary and fiscal policy. We know the too few goods is breaking the supply chains. That's what the lockdowners did. We know that ports in L.A. and Long Beach are backed up. And it's worse than that. Even when goods do get offloaded and put onto rail cars, you've got modern day Jesse Jameses stealing, hitting these rail cars in L.A.
Taking whatever they want. And it looks like a third world country. So much garbage. It's sick.
The Union Pacific officials have been openly complaining about the lack of law enforcement response to what's happening to these trains as they're being robbed, the rail cars being, and all the, you know, goods contained in them being stolen. It was enough such that Governor Gavin Newsom descended down from the French Laundry to survey the sites. And here's what he said.
I see what you see. I see what you've been covering. I see what everybody's seen, and asking myself, what the hell is going on? I mean, look like a third world country, these images, the drone images that were on the nightly news day in and day out. Some networks weaponizing them for their own, you know, political agenda, and others just reporting the damn news. This is not one-off. This is organized theft. They're organized groups of folks that move from site to site. When there's more attention, a bright light on one site, they move to the next site.
Well, then what, do something about it. I mean,
what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
You tell us, Gavin.
And he's out there picking up garbage.
What the hell is going on? Why don't you ask George Gascon, the DA in L.A., about his philosophy when it comes to prosecuting retail theft, prosecuting B&Es, breaking up these thievery rings. I mean, it's the same story over and over. What the hell is going on? What the hell is going on in New York City, where an officer was gunned down over the weekend and another officer is fighting for his life, both shot by what I understand is somebody with a long criminal record? What the hell is going on in Detroit, mentioned earlier in the show, a long criminal record, accused of setting his girlfriend on fire, 6.5 months pregnant with twins, burning 60% of her body, $50,000 bond. He posts $5,000 and he disappears. Law enforcement now looking for him. What's going on in Chicago, where last year we had 5 dozen individuals who were on electronic monitoring for a violent crime, either accused of murder or attempted murder, commit another violent crime while awaiting trial on the violent crime for which they were arrested?
And as we speak this morning, 2,300 violent criminals are on electronic monitoring in Chicago.
What the hell's going on? We know what the hell is going on. The question is, what the hell is anybody in big blue city America going to do about it? For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Doug Collins, former congressman from Georgia's 9th, author of The Clock and the Calendar, a front-row look at the Democrats' obsession with Donald Trump, and host of the Doug Collins podcast on the Salem Podcast Network. You can find his podcast at DougCollinsPodcast.com. Doug, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning. You know, I have a question for you. Does Gavin Newsom remind you of the guy who woke up after a 3-day binge and wakes up and wonders why his head hurts?
Right.
He looks like he did, too.
Yeah. Of course, what we know is that this moral indignation is all performative. We know what's going on, but we're unwilling to change the protocol. We're unwilling to pressure decarceration and non-prosecution prosecutors because they're our political allies. Isn't that right?
That is right. And this is my problem, though. You know, in one of the areas you just mentioned was that the area of the trains that are being broken into. My question is not only is, you know, we know that the L.A. prosecutorial, you know, DA down there and the situation in California, but my question is, where's Merrick Garland? This has to do with interstate commerce. This has to do with interstate transmission of goods. Where is the Department of Justice to, you know, the FBI, the full force of the federal government in this as well? It shows a lack of concern, frankly, from the very top on down. So it's not surprising that you see these things happening. And it's not about the police, you know, they need to be able to do their job. And you need to make sure that those who have violent criminals, those who are disrupting our neighbors, need to be taken off the street and not put back on.
So how can conservatives lead the way to cash bail reform?
The biggest way is, number one, is we got to hold, and this is going to be a longer process, too many times conservatives have let lower level, what I call lower level elections, be, you know, just go unnoticed. That's how we've gotten DAs in some of these cities and in other places, where they're never challenged about what they actually believe as far as a criminal justice, you know, procedure. But then we also have to put into real reforms in our legislatures as well, is what is actually qualifying to for bail or not. In many of the cases you just talked about and had on the show, these folks should have never been on a pretrial release. They should have never been there because of what they have done. And to have that many people out there, they know they're not getting monitored. This is where conservatives have to step up and say real criminal justice reform punishes those who need to be punished, holds accountable those who need to be held accountable, and then looks for ways to take those that we don't need to flood our system with and make sure we hold them accountable in different ways.
You know, I like what I think you're just intimating. I want to develop that a bit more, which is rather than just a federal law enforcement response, federalizing law enforcement, which troubles me, a federal political response from the Republican Party to play in these big cities and make law and order a front and center election issue, run credible candidates, support credible candidates for mayor of L.A., New York, Chicago, and the like.
Exactly. I mean, look, in some of these cities, we understand you may not get, you know, from a conservative perspective, a full-blown conservative, but at least if you put pressure on the Democratic Party or you put pressure on the political establishment in these towns to say, look, you're affecting our very public safety, and you're seeing it happen across the country. These are then, you know, highlights, as Gavin Newsom was so upset about, you know, no, you're going to highlight the stupid in these cities that are actually, you know, hurting people's lives. But it doesn't have to be, you know, a lock-em-up mentality with no concern, because that's almost as bad as the other way, because we end up with a system that is clogged up and inefficient. What you've got to do is you've got to say public safety number one, and then how do we help those who are in the system? This is where conservative compassion, actually, and conservative accountability comes in. Instead of just continually incarcerating mental health people who have mental health illness or drug addiction, how are we actually helping them break those cycles so we're not putting them in jail all the time?
Yeah, and just on the federal law enforcement, because, of course, especially now with Biden in the White House, you hear blue city and state mayors and governors talking about, oh, you know, working with the federal government and having the federal government come in. Now all of a sudden they're interested in the federal government. But even still, the federal law enforcement has a role to play, I'll grant you. But there's an interesting project being done by the Heritage Foundation and the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, where they're looking at the increase in the number of criminal sections in the federal criminal code, and they find there are about 36% more criminal sections in 2019 than there were 25 years earlier. And you know, I don't think that conservatives should allow the left to try to outsource law enforcement to the federal government. Conservatives need to hold state and local officials accountable for what they're doing at the state and local level. They have the tools to enforce the law and maintain the peace if they want to do that. And it's important that conservatives make it clear to their residential populations, this is on your leadership and the choices you're making at the state and local level.
You're exactly right. I fought this for years in Congress. I mean, we put the problem in America right now is not that we don't have enough laws. I mean, frankly, that's the last problem we have is enough laws. Now, I'm amazed in the state and local level, enforcement is where you actually have it. And so for liberals who, you know, again, leave the federal out of it, I mean, FBI is stressed on many things anyway, but when it comes back to state and local, you've got the laws on the books that can put all of these people in jail or hold them accountable. But then again, you have to also understand that new laws play better. It's a political sound. Well, I'm going to introduce a law that strengthens X. I'm going to do a law that does this. And you have mayors like your own Mayor Lightfoot there who simply talk about gun control and everything else, and yet the very issue is that everything she talks about is already illegal.
Right.
It's already illegal. You don't need more laws. You need enforcement. So it's the antithesis of the defund the police. It's the antithesis of drawing back our law enforcement community, because they're the ones that have to enforce the laws that are on the books, and we have enough laws.
Since we got you, and you're from Georgia, and you were a congressman, and you ran for Senate as well, Give us your handle on the Senate race against Warnock, which is a key seat for Republicans to pick up, as well as the governor's race, where you have former Senator Perdue challenging Brian Kemp in that Republican primary. How optimistic are you about good outcomes for Republicans in those two important races this cycle?
I'm very optimistic about it. I think in the Senate race, of course, you have Herschel Walker, former football player from down here. You have Gary Black, who's the agriculture commissioner. Both good candidates. It's going to be an interesting primary process, but whoever comes out of that will be together. And going against Warnock, who has shown himself to be completely out of touch with Georgia. And then on the governor's side, you've got the primary on a very base disliked governor in Governor Kemp. It's rare that you find an incumbent governor with a lot of resources and money open up behind in a primary, and that's where Kemp finds himself. Translating that into the general election, it's going to be Republicans in Georgia are going to have to show up and vote. They're going to have to get out. And if that happens, then I feel very optimistic about it.
All right. He is Doug Collins, former congressman from Georgia's 9th, author of The Clock and the Calendar, a front row look at the Democrats' obsession with Donald Trump. And host of the Doug Collins podcast on the Salem Podcast Network. Find his podcast at DougCollinsPodcast.com, DougCollinsPodcast.com. Doug Collins, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Great time. Y'all stay warm up there.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, you were talking about Aaron Rodgers early in the program in his ESPN interview before he and the Packers were felled by Garoppolo and the 49ers this weekend.
Robbie Gould.
And Robbie Gould,
in the clutch.
Tom Brady. I've never been a big fan of Tom Brady.
Oh, I love Tom Brady.
He is not going to the Super Bowl either, but last week he did something very nice for a 10-year-old named Noah Reeb, who's a brain cancer survivor.
Hey, Noah, what's up, man? Happy New Year. I know it's been a while. I hope you've been enjoying the season so far. We're grinding, getting ready to start the playoffs. But earlier, you held up that sign that I helped you beat brain cancer. Well, listen, your fight, you've inspired so many people, including myself, but millions of others also. And the NFL and the Bucks look forward to sending deserving fans to the Super Bowl each year and fans that have incredible stories like the one you've had. So as a thank you, I worked with both the Bucks and the NFL to get you and your family Super Bowl tickets this year in LA. We certainly hope to be there, but I know you're going to be there. It's going to be really cool for all of us. So glad to see you're doing well. Take care, man.
That's
and
awesome.
Enjoy the tickets. Let's go.
Look inside.
Well, kind of. Maybe let's go Rams.
Well, the good news is that Tom Brady can sit next to Noah in the stands now.
Oh, that's all right. Too soon, man. That's brutal for us Bucks fans.
And I'm going to, I guess I'll forgive him for Inflategate.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Russia has about 125,000 troops amassed on the Ukrainian border. And the State Department has told Americans now to get out of Ukraine. And, again, given the response from the administration when it was time to get out of Afghanistan, if I was an American who wanted to get out of Ukraine, I'd be planning my own private escape at present.
Yeah, they're encouraging them to take commercial flights right now and get out of here.
Yeah, because you know you can't count on us.
No, right. Emergency staff. Yeah, they're not going to help them.
Tony Blinken was on State of the Union with Dana Bash over the weekend. So what's an incursion that would generate a response for the administration? What's the threshold? For example, is seizing the Donbass region in eastern Ukraine, is that an invasion? Does that draw a response? What's the What's the threshold? What's the standard? And this is what Blinken had to say.
If a single additional Russian force goes into Ukraine in an aggressive way, as I said, that would trigger a swift, a severe, and a united response from us and from Europe. And again, there are other things that Russia could do that fall short of actually sending additional forces into Ukraine. And again, across the board, we're prepared with Europe for a swift and calibrated and very united response. We're looking at every single scenario, preparing for every single one.
But are we really? Are we really, Tony? And is that really the threshold? A single Russian troop crosses the border and the United States and Western Europe react in concert? To answer that question, we're pleased to be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano for our weekly conversation. He's the Vice President of the Catherine and Shelby Cullom Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation and author of the book Brutal War, Jungle Fighting in Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, are we really poised to strike if Putin does?
I can't let slip by pointing out the chasm, the Grand Canyon-wide chasm between what Blinken said and what the president said in his press conference. And the notion that you're in the middle of a global crisis and your Secretary of State and your president essentially say contradictory things. People used to make fun of Trump. I mean, that ought to scare the hell out of everybody. I mean, this would be like on the day after Pearl Harbor, if FDR made his Day of Infamy speech and, you know, Sumner Wells came out and said, well, maybe we'll fight the Japanese. We'll have to go back and think about it. I'm not really sure what the president was talking about. People should sit up and take notice. That is not a sign of an administration that has its act together.
Well, it's a sign of weakness. And what does that say to the, you know, our counterparts in Russia and China? Because, you know, they were listening to that.
Well, look, let's be honest. The reason, and I don't mean this in a mean partisan way or anything. The reason why we are where we are today is simple. It's Joe Biden. Putin didn't try this for 4 years. Biden was the one that ran away from Afghanistan. Biden was the one that proposed a defense budget that didn't even cover the cost of inflation. Biden officials are the ones running around Europe telling people for months and telling people in settings here in the United States that every embassy in town heard, and I'm sure the Russians heard as well, that, well, if something happens in Ukraine, that's a European problem. It's not our problem. So we are here today because the Russians and the Chinese have made an assessment that Biden is weak, and they want to see how they take advantage of that. And that's what has put the lives of 44 million Ukrainians at risk. And the only good news here is it takes us away from reminding that there are millions of people in Afghanistan starving to death right now because of the way Joe Biden left Afghanistan.
Is there any other outcome to this than Putin invading?
Well, the problem is only Vladimir Putin does that. I mean, he can do anything he wants. You know, he's made these impossible demands, and if he gets one of them, he doesn't really lose anything. I mean, he's already chalked in some pretty nice little wins. He's made Biden look feckless. I mean, the Europeans are running around saying, "Well, let's negotiate with the Russians without the Americans." There isn't clear NATO solidarity on this. I mean, there is, but when you actually go into the country, they're all over the place. It's immeasurably benefited the Chinese. You know, one of the silly things I constantly hear people say is, "Well, we need the Russians to focus on the Chinese." The Russians and the Chinese have identical objectives in Western Europe. They want the United States out. They want the region destabilized, and they want to be able to move in there and cut their own deals and each have spheres of influence. This is the notion that somehow the Russians are going to help us with the Chinese. That's nonsense. That's like assisted suicide.
So if Putin did invade and he took, say, the Donbass region, then what's next? Does he bring the entirety of Ukraine within Russian control? Does he move on to the Baltics? Because I take him at his word that revanchism is his philosophy and endgame.
Well, this is, I think, is the problem. I mean, this is an issue for Putin. There's 44 million Ukrainians. They're going to fight. I mean, he said, okay, maybe I'll just take a little piece of Ukraine.
But the Ukrainians are going to consider this a war, and they're going to fight whether he takes 10 feet or 100 miles. So if he goes into Ukraine, I think it's a full-scale war with Ukraine, whether he wants one or not. Look, and we know, and when you say, well, what's the U.S. going to do? Look, we're going to decide whether this is the stupidity of the Biden, Blinken, you know, comments. It doesn't matter if it's one soldier or 100,000 soldiers. The Ukraine is going to treat it like a war, and they're going to fight a war. And what we're going to do is we're going to supply arms to the Ukrainians, and it's going to be an ugly war, and the Russians are not going to appreciate that we're arming and supporting the Ukrainians. But all those lines of supply, they're all NATO territory. And if he touches an inch of that, he has just started a war with NATO. And we're going to have to defend every inch of NATO territory, regardless of whether he likes it or not. There's going to be millions of refugees that are going to pour into Western Europe. That's not going to make them happy. So it won't be the easiest day of the week. Now, I understand that Putin, you know, believes that Ukraine's part of Russia, and ultimately that's what he wants. Does he decide that this is the day to do that? You know, he's raised the stakes so high now. I don't know. If he just wanted a piece of Russian territory, he could have just grabbed it in 5 minutes before anybody noticed. And then he'd be talking about this after the fact. But now that he's created such a confrontation, I don't see a distinction anymore between grabbing 10 feet and taking over the country.
Yeah, and he wants, you know,
he basically just tries to take over the country.
Right. He wants to put in pro-Russian leaders in major towns. And do you know who it is who he wants to install in Ukraine?
The pro-Russian party in Ukraine has about 5% support. I mean, even though there are a lot of ethnic Russians in Ukraine, they're Ukrainians. They've lived their entire lives there. That is their country. They may speak Russian, but they don't want to be conquered. And they've seen what's happened in places like Donbass and Crimea. So, look, the Ukrainians are going to fight, and they're going to fight hard. And they may lose even, but they will bloody Russia, and it may not end. I mean, they may be launching insurgencies from Western Europe, and that's not going to work out. Because you think Putin's going to be really thrilled at, you know, having another Afghanistan in Ukraine? So he gets to make all the choices, but every choice isn't a free lunch for him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so Ukraine has the potential to be a quagmire for Putin, is what you're saying?
Oh yeah, potentially, sure. Or you know, NATO could completely collapse. I mean, you know, this is scary time stuff. And again, we're here for one reason. We're here because Putin sensed that Biden had given them the opportunity to do this. That's the only reason why we're here.
In the Wall Street Journal over the weekend, former Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd had an op-ed about China, talking about the dimming of China's economic future. And so I thought, well, do we have President Xi, who's on the cusp of seeking a third term? Do we have him sort of mimicking Putin? You deal with domestic turmoil by engaging in foreign exploits, and maybe this is the time for Xi as well with respect to Taiwan.
Well, I mean, certainly I don't think anybody expects anything until after
the Olympics.
You know, the Olympics. But, you know, again, same problem there, which is the Taiwanese are going to fight. It would get really bloody. The economic damage that will be done in the war is going to blow back on China as well, because they're also China's chip maker, and all that those chips will stop. So that's not a free lunch either. And again, what have we seen? I mean, I think one of the things that Putin and Xi have to wake up and smell the coffee a bit is what have they done in the world? Look at Taiwan. Taiwan has more friends now than when China started its campaign. We have tiny little Lithuania, which has been significant to China. Mm-hmm. Literally put their economy on the line to reestablish relations with Taiwan. They're making the sad thing is, again, I mean, I'm not partisan and it's not a political comment, but people have never before needed American leadership, and we've never had an American leader who's less willing to lead.
I wanted to get your reaction to a statement that came to light from the conference, the World Economic Forum, the Great Narrative Conference that they held back in November. the Great Narrative Conference, it was called. This is Klaus Schwab and the gang. You know them. One of the presenters at their final plenary session is the head of the School of Government at Oxford, Neri Woods. And she had this to say about where the world is between the elites in countries and the non-elites. And get your reaction to all of these elites that are helping to order the world and keep the peace and save us from oblivion.
At Davos a few years ago, you know, the Edelman survey showed us that the good news is the elite across the world trust each other more and more. So we can come together and design and do beautiful things together. The bad news is that in every single country they were polling, the majority of people trusted that elite less. So we can lead, but...
I think she's got the good news and the bad news reversed.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, for a scholar to make that kind of comment, like that, like, well, we all agree. I mean, look, I think this is another example of we have hit peak woke, that this notion that these elites are going to redesign the world. I think we're over that. And I think comments like that, the fact that everybody just dropped their jaws when they heard that comment, I think just demonstrates that. I mean, I think we've seen this in the election in Virginia with Glenn Youngkin. I think we've seen it here in the United States with Biden's poll numbers. People aren't signing up for this stuff. And I think we've seen the most important issue where I think we have seen this, and I think it's super significant, is climate change. Everybody on the planet, they've convinced us all that taking care of the planet's a responsible and important thing to do. But now that they've actually looked at the agenda that the radical left has for climate action, they're like, well, we're not going to do that. That's just stupid. So I think the problem is they've been so overly aggressive that they've actually created this pushback. And the difference is, and this is the value and the importance of democracy. Democracy has a release valve. You know, when Hitler started doing this in Germany, and people realized that national socialism and that in the end, oh my God, this is actually not a good idea. By that time, democracy had been destroyed, and there was no relief valve to say, okay, let's ratchet this back. The problem that these elites have is that democracy is still alive in the world. And you know, when they talk about the death of democracy, they talk about the death of people not listening to them. But the reality is democracy is literally the most vital thing we have, because it's the only thing keeping these yahoos in check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's, to me, too, the tone deafness of that statement over the, I mean, just to give a few examples, after the last few years of the yellow vests in France, Brexit, Trump, people are problems for them to work around. They don't have legitimate concerns that should be addressed.
You know, I think COVID's the best example. Remember, COVID. These are the geniuses that can run and solve everything. And they seem completely incapable of dealing with COVID. And yet they want us to believe that they're like Nostradamus and they have this omniscient vision of how to fix everything. I mean, they have no – the problem is they have all hubris and no humility.
Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, VP of the Catherine and Shelby Cullom Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation, the book – Brutal War, Jungle Fighting in Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, in our latest installment of Campus Beat. I'm singing the theme music, but Leah Thomas.
Oh, you want your theme music?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do.
Ask me, shall we see?
Because they got the beat, the Campus Beat, the Campus Beat. Yeah, the Campus Beat.
I need it because it provides more pep to the segment,
yeah.
Don't you think? Leah Thomas is the dude at University of Pennsylvania who swam for the men's swim team for the first 3 years of his career there. And then this year decided he's a woman and is swimming for the women's swimming team at Pennsylvania.
He's feeling like a lady, and he did well over the weekend, right?
He's the Jackie Robinson of trans sports. That's what he says. I've got a nickname for him now I'm going to use.
All right, what is it?
Let me try it out on you. The clownfish.
Oh.
You know
but
why
are the clownfish fast? Yeah, they are, actually.
No, that's not why. Little known fact, you know, unless you're ichthyologist like I am. All anemone fish.
Oh, I love anemone fish.
Anemone fish, yeah. Including clownfish are born male, but they have the ability to turn themselves female. But if they make that change, they can't go back to being male.
Wow.
How about that?
That is awesome. That, and okay.
And I think clownfish is more catchy than anemone fish. Don't you?
But a clownfish is an anemone fish.
Correct. That's,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
Genus class phylum here. Yeah. The clownfish, Leah Thomas. Yeah. Over the weekend, he won the 100 yard by a full second. He won the 200 yard by a full second. And
which is, if you're not a swimmer, that's a long, that's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah. That's not close.
No.
He has qualified for the NCAA championship. Swim meet. He will compete in the 200 yard, 500 yard, and 1650 yard freestyle. So look for Leah Thomas to take home the gold at the NCAA Swimming and Diving Championships in March there.
Think anybody's going to broadcast that?
Maybe. Yeah. Sure. There is one University of Penn female swimmer who opined on this recently, and anonymously, of course. She said, quote, "I'm trying to do everything I can without harming my future. I'm trying to do everything I can without harming my future." Is that the right approach? Does that statement square with you?
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Let me give you an alternative approach, what I consider an alternative approach. University of Chicago football player Arthur Long, perhaps the greatest since Jay Berwanger, who, Amy, was?
A football player?
The first Heisman Trophy winner.
Oh, exactly, the Heisman.
University of Chicago, yeah.
Oh, that's right, back when they were powerhouses. 1939. In the midway.
I think it was 39. University of Chicago football player Arthur Long was on with Laura Ingraham last week because she will not comply with the school's vax mandates, and now University of Chicago is one of those schools that's imposing a booster mandate to be up to date, to be vaxxed, and that's by the end of this month, January 31. Here's Arthur Long describing the COVIDians' harassment of him from the beginning of the year to present.
I received a medical exemption back in June of last year. And then when I showed up to football camp in August, I was rudely awakened by three university officials who banged on my door and said that I was sleeping in an unauthorized bed and forced me to move to a single, which is what all unvaccinated kids need to do now at UChicago. This was the first of three shocking events that have happened to me at the university. During midterms, I received an unsigned email from Student Wellness saying that I was not in compliance with the university's mandate, and it told me that my Wi-Fi, access to university buildings, and my dorm room where I sleep were about to be terminated. And then during final exams, I received an email from the director of student wellness saying yet again that I was not in compliance with the mandate. He cited a bunch of anonymous experts and no facts and tried to override the advice of my own personal physician.
So is Arthur Long trying to do everything he can and still protect his future? Here's what he is going to do in response to that booster mandate that takes effect January 31st.
That's correct. We resume in-person classes next Monday. But the thing is, Laura, I'm not going to get the vaccine. I'm certainly not going to be coerced by a bunch of anonymous bureaucrats and so-called experts who think they can make my own personal health decisions for me. I know this is a fight that's going across America, and it's sad that it's come to UChicago, which is, you know, known as a bastion of intellectual freedom and open and rigorous debate. But the only people who don't want to debate this are the university administration.
Yeah, University of Chicago is a bastion of intellectual freedom and open debate, the way that Loyola Academy in Wilmette is Catholic. That is a reputation that belongs to a bygone era in that school's history. It does not apply today. So who's right? Is Arthur Long right? Is he taking the right approach? Or is that anonymous University of Pennsylvania female swimmer taking the right approach, staying anonymous, saying, I'm trying to do everything while protecting my future? Who's right? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. If Arthur Long was your kid, or that anonymous Penn female swimmer was your kid, what would you tell them to do?
Arthur Long, what he was talking about, it sounds like he's being treated as if he's a criminal. You know, like your bed is gone.
So what would you tell him to do?
Stand up and fight. Keep fighting. Keep showing up. Don't let them win. Mm-hmm. And as for the female swimmers, I mean, Clownfish is taking a position away from a qualified, probably accomplished swimmer who has worked her whole life to be on that team. And the fact that he swam on the men's team for 3 years, he should stay on the men's team. And the NCAA should not allow this to continue, because if you tested his testosterone level, it would be higher than any female he's competing against, obviously.
Well, what about protecting her future? I mean, isn't that something that is said and that you hear and I hear and we hear all the time? Yeah, I certainly don't agree, but I got to protect my future. I mean, she's staying anonymous.
They're
with
all
her comments.
Anonymous, right.
Right, they all are.
They
exactly
all are,
right.
Whatever they, you know.
Exactly
right. Because not one person on that team is happy with that decision that was made.
Even the parents of the female swimmers are staying anonymous.
But they're not happy. They're not clapping when Leah Thomas swims. No one is. Some people even walk up and get out.
Is that enough of a protest? Is that the right approach?
If they want to save the future of women's sports, they've got to, you know, form a solidarity right now with the parents and the swimmers and just say enough is enough. Stand up and I'll walk out. Forfeit a meet.
We were talking about this in the context of Chicago earlier in the program when it comes to business leaders or civic leaders standing up on the matter of the violent crime that has overtaken the city. And what's their response? It's a version of, is it not? I'm trying to do everything I can while protect my future. Is that acceptable? Is that a cop-out? Or suggesting that's a cop-out, is that unfair? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Paul in Geneva, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, yeah, just a thought. Maybe there's some long-range planning here from the Disney folks. Maybe their next Nemo movie is going to have Nemo transition to a female.
Oh, that's right. That was a clownfish.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Paul. Yeah, and if they title it clownfish, I want my royalties. Something else at University of Chicago, someone else who is speaking under his own name, is the vice president of the outlet, the Chicago Thinker.
Oh, yeah.
University of Chicago's Declan Hurley is deaf, and he posted this plea to University of Chicago administrators.
I'm an undergraduate at the University of Chicago, a school that I love. But today, I'm imploring the University of Chicago administration to lift or modify its mask mandate, which hurts deaf and hard of hearing people like me. For context, the university last fall allowed students and professors to remove their masks while speaking in class. This policy allowed me to actually hear my classmates and instructors, as masks muffle people's speech and prevent me from reading their lips. Moreover, people subconsciously change their speech patterns while wearing masks. But this quarter, the university is explicitly banning students and professors from taking off their masks while speaking in class. Administrators cite the Omicron variant but one report says that Omicron's case fatality rate is 1/40th of that of the Delta variant. The New York Times says that for a vaccinated 75-year-old, contracting the flu is riskier than getting Omicron. And the university allows students to wear cloth masks, which former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb says are near functionless against COVID. If you Chicago administrators want to be humane and epidemiologically sensible, they should lift their mask mandate. That way I could converse meaningfully with classmates instead of having to strain to hear them, and I could talk with staff instead of having to ask them to repeat themselves half a dozen times. At the very least, I beg you Chicago to allow me to hear in class by letting professors and students take off their masks while speaking. Anything less is cruel to the deaf and hard of hearing and sinks beneath UChicago's legacy of free academic inquiry. The deaf and hard of hearing did not choose this disability, but the university president and provost can choose to let us hear.
It's good to know there are still some smart kids like Declan Hurley and Arthur Long going to University of Chicago.
Yeah, and that they're still fighting for their freedoms. Because we're not going to be free, folks, until the mask mandates and the vaccine mandates are gone. But then they'll come up with something else.
Well, Declan Hurley, if you're Declan Hurley's mom or dad, Declan, think about your future. You don't want to be seen as non-compliant with the COVIDians. Arthur.
They'll come and get you.
Think about your future. You don't want to be seen as an anti-vax iconoclast. Just comply. Right? You got to think about your future. Female swimmers around the country who will compete against the clownfish, Leah Thomas, in those events at the national championship meet. Play along. You don't want to think about your future. You don't want to. You got to think about your future. You don't want to jeopardize your future. Right? Isn't that right? Kent and Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I think in any race where there is a trans woman, one by one, the girl should just jump ahead of the whistle. And, you know, they have to start over and just keep doing it.
Okay, thanks for the call, Kent. How about just not participating? I mentioned this, I think, last week. We were talking about this topic because, Amy, your foster son had to wrestle a female wrestler.
Wrestler, yep.
But we've seen in state,
advice.
Yeah, we've seen in state championship meets where, well, clearly the guy who was going to be the state champion, defending state champions, have forfeited matches. They refuse to wrestle a female or a female because they don't want to hurt the female. So couldn't female swimmers who also qualify for those events in which the clownfish is going to swim not show up, leave the pool vacant to Leah Thomas, or would that be jeopardizing their future? Holly in St. Louis.
Hey, good morning. I could talk for half an hour on this subject, but I won't. I do want to tell you that clownfish is possibly going to break two college records, one held by Missy Franklin and two held by Katie Ledecky. And that's when the swim world is going to lose their marbles. When these records that are icons in the sport of women swimming start falling to clownfish, that's when I think USA Swimming is going to step up and take a stand. But that'll be something if she breaks both of those records. My daughter goes to a University of Chicago-ish school in Southern California. She is a collegiate swimmer. She went back early for training in December and immediately tested positive for COVID. And she was terrified that she, you know, she's a known conservative, that her testing positive would just really bring the wrath of the team down on her as the only conservative. And she was thrilled to call me and report that three other libtards, as she calls them, had tested positive. It was a huge relief to her because these kids are under immense pressure. We're asking 20-year-olds to do things that we ourselves as grown-ups can't do. Earlier in the show, you talked about somebody who went to the mask mandate, stop the mandate in Chicago, and they tried to talk to the opposing people, and they said it was impossible. And these are adults. Imagine what 20-year-olds are trying to do in this space. you're asking a lot. They're not all Dan Prof. You know, you're asking a lot for these kids to take a stand. She's going to be taking a stand against getting the booster. She says, Mom, my college, my whole college, my degree is on the line. I mean, you're asking a lot for these kids, Dan. I mean, with all due respect.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. That's why I'm highlighting Arthur Long and Declan Hurley as well, because there are kids that age, young people that age, that are not staying anonymous, not saying I'm going to comply because of some idea I have about protecting my future. That whole idea that you're protecting your future, is that a premise that should be challenged? I think so.
Is that selfish?
I mean, it's not about being selfish. Are you really protecting your future is the question.
Well, because the future is Leah Thomas is going to take somebody's spot in the Olympics, in the Women's Olympics. Because beats Katie Declan's record, then that's it. She'll be in the Olympics.
Katie Ledecky. That's part of the future, but it's much bigger than that, isn't it? Chris in Evanston.
Yeah. Hi, guys. You're the greatest as always. I just want to say you're right. When you concede to the tyranny, you strengthen it. On the other hand, everybody has their own situation, and I think it's important right now not to judge. That might change. Everybody has to resist, but each of us must resist in the way that we can, where whatever our station in life or situation. Those are my two cents. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Chris. I mean, that's fair. Not everybody has to play the same role. Not everybody has to do the same thing. I agree, and I certainly wouldn't be proposing there's a one-size-fits-all. But there is sort of attitude. There is sort of a philosophy that undergirds the choice that Arthur Long made, the choice that Declan Hurley made, and the choice that those anonymous female swimmers are making and their parents. Betsy, Northside.
Yes, I just wanted to say we have no future. If this is the way people are going to behave, there will be no future. And people need to stand up, and you don't have to be violent. We just celebrated Martin Luther King's birthday. We could do passive resistance. Like you said, no one show up for these events that are a joke. Not even a joke. And it's a shame. And I want to congratulate the University of Chicago students, because those two students you mentioned are living up to the true standards of that university. Stand up, people.
Thanks for the call, Betsy. Mike, Buffalo Grove.
Morning. You need to take into consideration, first of all, I think they're both right, because you got to take into consideration the circumstances and what each the swimmers are doing and the football player. A football player is less likely to damage his future, but a woman who's going to go against the LGBTQ community is up against almost a mafia, and she's not going to be able to make, there aren't many careers as a professional woman swimmer, but when she gets out there in her chosen field and tries to apply for a job and there's somebody, oh, you stood up against them. So those are, I see both these people right for her remaining anonymous and him coming out.
All right.
He's got Aaron Rodgers backing them up with the vaccination. And in regards to the mask mandate, my granddaughter is also deaf, and she recently moved. My son moved to the free state of Florida, and her language is finally coming back.
Good.
That's all I have to say about the
mask. Save the children.
Thanks for the call, Mike. I appreciate the perspective. I would just say, you know, the LGBTQ mob on college campuses, the COVIDians on college campuses, they're not a mob.
Yeah.
The stand that Arthur Long, is taking will not follow him.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Former New York Times columnist Barry Weiss was on the odious Bill Maher's program over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And what you're about to hear from Ms. Weiss was celebrated by... by the audience. Also by conservatives like Clay Travis. Should it be? Here's Barry Weiss picking up on the piece that she wrote last week at her Substack that we referenced about how she's done with COVID. COVID is over for her.
I'm done.
With this question?
No, I'm done with COVID. I'm done. It's like I went so hard on COVID.
I
sprayed the Pringles cans that I bought at the grocery store, stripped my clothes off because I thought COVID would be on my clothes. Like, I did it all. I watched Tiger King. I got to the end of Spotify. Like, we all did it, right? A lot of us did do it. And then we were told, you get the vaccine. You get the vaccine and you get back to normal. And we haven't gotten back to normal. And it's ridiculous at this point. I know that so many of my liberal and progressive friends are with me on this, and they do not want to say it out loud because they are scared to be called anti-vax or to be called science denial or to be, you know, smeared as a Trumper. I'm sorry. If you believe the science, you will look at the data that we did not have 2 years ago, and you will find out that cloth masks do not do anything. You will realize that you can show your vaccine passport at a restaurant and still be asymptomatic and carrying Omicron. And you will realize, most importantly, that this is going to be remembered by the younger generation as a catastrophic moral crime. The city of Flint, Michigan, which is 80%, I think, minority students, has just announced indefinite virtual schooling. In the past 2 years, we've seen among young girls a 51% increase in self-harm. People are killing themselves. They are anxious. They are depressed. They are lonely. That is why we need to end it more than any inconvenience that it's been to the rest of us. I think it's a pandemic of bureaucracy. It's a pandemic of bureaucracy. It's not real anymore.
Let's not forget.
You know, I'm all for the William F. Buckley observation that we need to give our political opponents the space to come over to our side. I support that concept. Ronald Reagan started out as a Democrat, right? Came over to the conservative side. And there are many other examples of that. But not without qualification. Barry Weiss confessed in that piece that's being feted by conservatives, in an unqualified fashion, that she fed the panic. And there were some of us, right from the outset, who exercised restraint, who said we need more information before we engage in these draconian policies, who recognized in the early summer of 2020 that there was harm being done to kids who were pushed out of school. There was a Brown University study at the time that suggested kids were already, just losing the spring semester of that year, were falling behind. And some of us reminding the world that, you know, kids fall behind in the primary grades. Oftentimes they don't catch up, particularly in terrible school districts, which are most urban school districts.
And they're never going to catch up. And then they had another year without in-person learning.
We also, that at that time, there was a Yale University study about transmission, looking at more than 40,000 daycare center environments and finding nary much evidence at all of transmission from kids to adults. And we said, well, we should take these studies under consideration before we run headlong into lockdowns and the economic impact. And comments from, for example, the head of the UN World Food Program, who said if you break these supply chains, you're going to increase the number of people around the world who starve to death or who are pushed to the brink of starvation by threefold. You know, tens of millions more. So, yeah, I understand why people want to celebrate those who we've seen the scales fall from their eyes, but not without reckoning. Because this is just my supposition. this pandemic of bureaucracy that Barry Weiss now observes, she will feed it again the next time there's the opportunity to panic. For more on this, pleased to be joined by Joy Pullman, executive editor of The Federalist, thefederalist.com. Joy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What about even those, and you know, Barry Weiss and her leftist friends that she describes as agreeing with her? Yes, you can come over to our side. Yes, we welcome support for the sort of trade-off analysis that hasn't been done over the most of the last 2 years. But there needs to be an accounting for your responsibility in feeding the mindless pandemonium that you fed for much of the last 2 years.
I mean, I kind of both agree with you and with her, and I'm not usually the kind of split the baby sort of person. So, in fact, I did. In fact, the Federalist, which I work for, was notable in publishing an article I wrote 3 days after my governor locked down my state, saying, you know, this is probably a bad idea. No one's considering the trade-off. So, like you, I was one of the early people, you know, really skeptical of this, especially since, you know, quarantines of the healthy have never, ever, ever in history, you know, with many worse pandemics been a recommended, you know, or adopted sort of attempted intervention. And now we know that they're absolutely a failure. So I do think that, you know, we absolutely need the people who made bad decisions in the face of, they had, you know, available historical and other data that at the time, you know, should have cautioned them about lockdowns. So I fully agree with that. But at the same time, you have to understand, you know, the many, many Americans believed that, you know, the experts who turned out to be colossal failures. And you know, I think, of course, everyone bears responsibility for their own decisions. But at the same time, you know, I don't know about you, but I have made many big errors and not only in my personal life, but in my punditry. So, for example, I didn't get Donald Trump. You know, for a very long time, that, you know, was a mystery and a struggle for me. And that was, you know, failure of insight. So, you know, so all of us humans are imperfect and we don't understand the world well. And it's very hard to know what to do, especially when issues are as clouded as COVID was purposefully. And so we really, really need people to kind of reassess and change their minds and be able to have the humility to publicly admit it like Barry Weiss did. So, you know, even though people should take into consideration her failure there, just like they should my misunderstanding of Trump and you know, other things that pundits, you know, get wrong. I also kind of welcome it, the ability to publicly say that I was very wrong and I hurt people because of it is completely missing from our society. And it's one of the reasons that we continue to have so many catastrophic social failures, because nobody will actually take responsibility for bad decisions that they have made, and nobody holds anyone accountable. And so her doing that is sadly rare and very much needed. So I'm really not going to be, you know, criticizing her as harshly as I'm going to be criticizing people who continue to lie knowingly to Americans like Dr. Fauci and, frankly, you know, the leaders of the Democratic Party right now, because they believe they benefit politically from lying to people. So, you know, I appreciate her humility, and we need a lot more of that. And all Americans, you know, regardless of what our political views are, need to be able to do that, or we really can't have a country anymore.
Yeah, but there's no exit ramp. I mean, these Democratic governors and health department officials have dug their heels in so deep. I don't think that they know what metrics have to be in place or what has to happen in order to take an exit ramp. I mean, here in Illinois, we have been masked for the last 20 out of 24 months. We had a few months off, but we've been masked again since August 23rd. And you can't do anything and go anywhere without a mask and in certain outdoor settings. So I don't know how. Do you think what she said would convince any Democratic leaders maybe to change their mind or to think about their actions?
I think it does, because, you know, right now Americans are so very, you know, tribal affiliated. And I mean, this is true on the right as well as on the left. And the left is much more strongly, they feel like they can't break ranks and say the truth. You know, because it's treated as a betrayal of their political tribe. And so that's an extremely dangerous dynamic. And so Barry Weiss doing that, giving permission to, you know, people on the left to finally say the truth, is extremely important and needed for us to have any sort of healthy discourse. I mean, I agree with you. Like, I've been feeling abused by my fellow Americans as well. You know, that feeling of being betrayed and of being abused because people won't let go of their fears is absolutely deep. But, you know, but if I'm going to wait for, you know, people to really take accountability and say that they're sorry, you know, we're going to be waiting forever.
No. Yeah. It,
just
yeah.
Practically speaking, you know, we've all got to change our minds, get in line with reality and move on.
Or unless there's an election.
Yeah. I mean, so I agree. You know, there have been times in my life that I've made mistakes and I've almost always paid for them in spades. But but here's the thing. It's not even that, like, I'm sorry or I made a mistake. That's all well and good, as you said. But it's, does that change the trajectory that was present before COVID of our safety as culture and what that implicates in terms of the ever expansion of government and in the ever interventionist nature of government in our daily lives? See, I'm not hearing Barry Weiss or others say this. Frankly, I'm not even hearing a lot of conservatives say this. Take the more global picture. We're going to come out of this, but we've set all sorts of precedents that have moved the flag for the safetyists, who are mainly Marxists.
It's true.
Down the path, and you know, again, understanding, like, so the real lesson here is to talk about how we're going to organize this free society against those safetyists that seek to subjugate others, for whatever the predicate.
I mean, I just kind of think that the difference we're kind of talking about here is the difference between accountability and revenge. I don't want revenge on my fellow Americans, but I do want accountability. So all those health boards, the governors, the state legislatures who mishandled their authority, who either refused to exercise it when they needed to or exercised it in abusing their people, you know, they should frankly be tossed out of office. You know, when things came down to the wire, when there was a crisis, they chose the coward's way out and they hurt people because of it. You know, and so they have clearly shown that they're not fit to hold office, to be in positions of public trust. You know, and so, you know, but, you know, that's the voters' hard, long job of providing that public accountability. And at the same time, you know, people who don't have positions of authority, who are just your fellow citizens, you know, I think you would take a different approach to them than to people who abuse their authority in positions of power.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair point, a good point. But I also think that, you know, sometimes people need to be made an example of as a message to the others. And I don't mean that in an autocratic way like the left does, but I do mean that in a rhetorical way, in terms of a discourse. I mean, look at how the left uses shame. And again, I'm not saying adopt the tactics of the left, but I'm not saying don't adopt some of those that are rhetorical and civil in nature, but pointed nonetheless. And conservatives seem loath
to
do that.
I totally agree with that. And it should be directed at public officials, people who should have known better, who did know better. And again, you know, I mean, straight up, we know from the data, you know, the left lied and children died. You know, we have children who committed suicide because of lockdowns that never needed to happen. Right. And, you know, and so that is an immoral abomination that our society, you know, really, yeah, we do need to hold people accountable. But I would say, and you know, so far, part of the problem is that voters have failed to do that. You know, so here in Indiana, you know, our Republican governor, you know, instituted lockdowns. He's on almost his 23rd, you know, executive emergency, you know, mandate, completely unchecked by our Republican state legislature. And voters revoted most of those people in, you know, in the 21 elections, right? So we have, you know, we totally need to hold governors, state lawmakers, public health officials accountable. But before then, you know, it's our job to basically tell ourselves to stand up and get out there and make that happen. Their failure is partly our failure to vote and move the right way and to just say, well, you know, my kid didn't die, so who cares? That's kind of the attitude a lot of people still are giving.
No, I'm glad you raised Holcomb, too, because it is it transcends partisan affiliation. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Joy Pullman, executive editor of The Federalist, thefederalist.com. Joy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy your day. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. There are more issues than COVID with respect to our daily lives, as well as with respect to the daily lives of kids in school. So Glenn Youngkin wins an upset victory in Virginia, and then a message is sent, and all of the bad actions of the bad actors in charge of the school districts, which turned the race for Glenn Youngkin, those parents in those school districts that were fed up with their school district's imperiousness on COVID as well as curricula issues, and even honesty with respect to, say, a sexual assault. Those were the voters who turned the race for Glenn Youngkin. So school districts got the message, and a new day has dawned in Virginia. No.
Or so we thought.
Not exactly. Not exactly. Jeff Darr, he's the dad of a 13-year-old who's in the Prince William County School District in Virginia. He recently came from work, it would appear, because he was in work clothes watching the video, to address the school board about the sexual assault of his 13-year-old daughter. Listen to this exchange.
I was calling about an incident that happened to my daughter in school. She was sexually assaulted, and I was wondering if y'all can explain to me how the policy and procedures are for the administrators to handle the situation. I don't know. Does anybody have any answers how the process works?
Oh, my goodness.
Mr. Darr, we typically don't go and have a back and forth here, but we're happy to take your comments by email or appointment and work with you on that.
That I don't understand. So where do you find the rules and regulations at? Where do the administrators from the school find the rules and regulations of what they're supposed to, like they have policies and procedures?
Mr. Darr, I can have someone work with you on that if you want to step over to the side and they can go over where you can find all that.
So I want the public to know. That's why I come here, because I want the public to know.
So we won't be answering you, but you can certainly keep asking.
Well,
while you're standing.
I want to know the school's definition of sexual assault, because my daughter was told that she's standing right there, that if it's above the clothes, it's not sexual assault.
Oh, boy.
And that's the way the county does the kids here. It's messed up. That's my daughter. And no one wants to do nothing about it. You suspend the boy for one day for improper touching, and I don't think that's right. So somebody needs to do something. Somebody needs to look in the matter and do something, because there's more kids out there that y'all not doing nothing and letting stuff slide under. And the only person that's hurting is the kids. And I don't think it's right.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Your reaction to the school board's response to Mr. Darr about the alleged sexual assault of his 13-year-old daughter. And I hope someone calls and says, well, you know, in the public comment section of these board meetings, they don't respond. And that's just, you know, how they treat it for everybody. And so, you know, no special treatment for Mr. Darr. Is that right?
Make an exception. The man is hurting. His daughter is grieving. He is lost, and he needs help, and they don't care. They look so arrogant up there by their non-action actions. It's hard to stomach.
Mr. Darr, you have 3 minutes. You can keep asking the question about your daughter's sexual assault, but we're not going to respond. We'll respond offline. You can send us an email or make an appointment. It's an elected school board.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
A school board member at a community in Pennsylvania has an op-ed that maybe Mr. Darr would be interested in reading. published in a local paper there. Richard Robinson, York Suburban School Board. With all due respect, no, I don't work for you. It's a requirement of local school boards to provide opportunities for public comment. This provision gives residents of a school district the chance to vent their spleens about exorbitant taxes or demand subjects be taught properly the way they were during the most frigid period of the Cold War. Huh. Oh, boy. In past, more often than not, nobody showed up. Not these days. Social media outlets, national news broadcasts, and our local newspapers tell school boards are now the battleground in the fight for America's future. Some members of my community appear to interpret this part of board meetings as the occasion to tell board members why they have the collective intelligence of a village idiot or how the school district ought to be addressing real problems. When the board does not fall in line with each and every demand, we're accused of ignoring the thoughtful, unbiased, sincere, and righteous ultimatums of our community. For this reason, my comments are not coming from a member of the school board, but rather as a member of my community who serves on the school board. With all due respect, the men and women who snarl, I'm a taxpayer, you work for me. No, I don't work for you. I was elected by people who voted to represent you. It's not the same thing. You may also be surprised to learn every member of the school board is a taxpayer, too. I come from a long line of taxpaying men and women. Don't work for you. I'm just a taxpayer who is elected to represent all the people. And so if you say I work for you, no, I don't work for you. I work you individually. I work for the collective you. Is me individually part of the collective you?
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
And you know what? Maybe this protocol of not having exchanges at governmental meetings like this, board meetings like this, not just for school boards, municipalities, counties, etc. Maybe that should be revisited. Maybe somebody should offer in public comment section, you know what would be good for the school board to do is that we do have some back and forths, not protracted. We're all adults here. I make a point or two. If I have a question, you respond publicly so everybody gets to hear it. We have a dialogue here. Not screaming, not name-calling, but a dialogue here. Because actually the lack of response is what generates the pointed remarks, so much of the pointed remarks in these school board meetings, for example, or other meetings, other governmental meetings. If you would respond to Mr. Darr as to what your policies and procedures are with respect to sexual assault or where he could find them, it's a pretty basic question, I frankly think Mr. Darr was incredibly reserved considering the context of his comments.
He was so genuine, though, and real. You know, yeah. Like his pain was so raw.
And right, which I suspect most parents would be unbelievably hurt and angry if their daughter was sexually, 13-year-old daughter was sexually assaulted. Or
and you just want to know if you're touched above the clothes and that's not, you know, helping me out here. And if I was a school board member, I would have gotten out and I would have just given him a great big hug.
The disciplinary, you know, the layers of discipline or the progression of discipline with respect to this 1-day suspension. What's you know, you're the school board. This is an important policy. It's got to be memorialized somewhere. Tell me where it is and tell me if this is just punishment or something that you should look into. Why can't everybody hear that? Maybe that actually would diffuse some of the contentiousness if you didn't act like you were people's superiors. You did act as this D-bag from York Township in Pennsylvania says, but doesn't really mean it, that I'm just another taxpayer like you and I'm your temporary representative. And if I was in your position, I'd be reacting the same way. So I'm going to do my best to respond to the issue that you're raising and get whatever answers that we can obtain. No, we don't comment. You can keep asking the question, but we don't normally comment. Uh-huh. Kevin, Austin, Texas.
This is Kafka-esque. Anyhow, I get better empathy if I want to return something at Walmart. Oh, I'm so sorry that happened. Let me see what I can do to help you.
It's so true.
I mean, these people, I mean, how about some basic decency of, you know what, must be very frustrating. Let's get, you know, we'll sit down with you after the meeting and help you. It's these people that are just, I think they're just in a bunker mentality and they have absolutely no idea. And they're just trying to save their save themselves. God, there's so many other words I want to use right now, but it's a radio show. And they're just incompetent. And people got to get organized on the local level and get rid of these morons.
Thanks, Kevin. Greg LaGrange.
Hi, good morning. It's a God complex with these people. He asked for transparency, for a policy to be posted somewhere so he could look at it. And these people have a God complex. And if you want to know what evil is defined as what that board acts as. They know evil and crimes are happening, but they turn a blind eye to it because it's politically inexpedient for them to deal with it. They're nothing but tyrants at school board level, and they have to be disbanded, and they have to be voted out, and they have to be broken up, because these are children we're talking about. Children. They're being violated. And all he asked for was a policy to see online somewhere. And he would have been happy, like Dan said. Just engage in a civil discourse like you're two adults, but they talk down to you because they don't respect you or your kids. Just remember that, because you know what? That's evil.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Greg. I think that's the point right there. I think you hit it. Because, you know, Mr. Darr, maybe he's not familiar with Robert's Rules of Order. He has other irons in the fire. Maybe he missed it on the website. Maybe he could have gone to an administrator to get a manual. But he's going to his duly elected school board member. I'm elected to represent you, says the Yorktown Township, Pennsylvania D-bag. Okay, well then represent my interests. My daughter got sexually assaulted. How are you representing my interests? How are you protecting her interests? But rather than, again, as you say, be decent, be a human being about it, it's what we have this rule. We don't respond during public comment. We don't get into exchanges. We have this rule. We're not allowed to think. We're not human beings because we have this rule. This is all the policies and procedures, the zero tolerance. We don't trust our own judgment. So we have these rules, and they can never be violated. They're sacrosanct. The policies and procedures of a school district is some sort of suicide pact among the school board members and administrators and teachers unions that run the whole show. It's an affront. Tom in Galesburg.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I'm the father of three, along with my daughter here in Illinois, a grandfather of five, two-term school board member here in Illinois, and also had a 35-year career in the Illinois Public Community College system. The last 8.5 years I served as president. And your question this morning is extraordinarily important. My perspective is, during my career as a president, I had more arguments with our attorneys than I ever had with the public. Hmm. Part of what's happened in our society is, under the umbrella of the pursuit of perfection, we have hunkered down into legalese. As laypersons serving on a public school board, we should not be expected to be perfect. That is why we need open communications and dialogue with our consumers, our public. The founding fathers were prudent when they put the military under the control of the civilians. What's happened is attorneys have become the equivalent of the military, and we're no longer willing to be in charge of them. School board members are afraid of somehow violating legalese. And as laypersons, we have to stop that nonsense and challenge that kind of thinking. School board members are responsible to their consumers. And yes, they take actions as boards of a whole, not as individuals, but they can sure as hell answer and give definitive information and challenge their administrators to give open and transparent information at all times.
Great comments, Tom. I appreciate the call very much. Thank you. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.